this latest edition of the Forever Bristol City podcast. It really is the start of a new era under manager Nigel Pearson. I'm sure he might want to claim credit for the win at Ayresome Park. No, it's a Riverside, isn't it now? Because City have done it again for only, well, last time they did it, two three-goal wins back-to-back was back in October 2014. So we're back amongst the goals. Joining me tonight are Mark, Ian and Les, and anybody else who wants to maybe try and dial in. We'll fit you in if we can. Leave any messages as well. We'll try and reply to those. Yeah, the first proper game under the tutelage of Mr. Pearson. I'll come to each of you guys in turn. Sum up the game in less than 15 seconds. I'll start with you first, Les.
Big managers make big Very decisions. Good. He changed it at half time, and that's what good people do. And it made all the difference.
Ian, 15 seconds, if you can manage that.
I think it was a game of 2 halves. We could have easily been 3 or even 4 down at half time. The left hand side of the defence was all over the place, and we were awful as an attacking unit. Second half, we went 4-4-2 or 4-3-3. It's difficult to see when you're not there. And we put some pressure on their defence. After the commentator said, God, their central defenders are really comfortable on the ball. Well, you would be if no one's within 20 metres of you. I'd be really comfortable on the ball. So, he made positive changes, unlucky with the penalty, and good old Keith Stroud, because he's been in charge of 4 games this season, and we won all of them.
Well, we, by and large, you all think Keith Stroud is a right, but there we go. Mark, your summary in 15 seconds, just sum up the game before we get into the detail.
A coupon buster of result. Swansea had only conceded 6 at home all season. City scored 3 in the last 24 minutes, but let's not kid ourselves. Swansea could have been out of sight by half time if it hadn't been for some great saves by Dan Bentley. But a change of formation and determination saw City score 3 and 2 wins out of 2 after 7 defeats.
Yeah, no, that's good. Somebody's just logged in here. I said, I've just logged in, and first thing is, I hear Ian, we were awful as an attacking unit. In fairness, somebody, Osh J Newport, we'll come on to that in a minute. Okay, look, let's look at the lineup. I'll come to you first, Ian. I mean, the manager, what a cool... I saw his pre-match interview. He, well and truly, has got a totally different demeanour about him to poor old Dean and Dean's predecessor. But he said that the players had deserved to start, those who finished at the Riverside in the week. Ian, your thoughts on the lineup?
I don't think, in fairness, Dave, he could have done much else apart from what he did at half-time, which was just before half-time, he made one change, which was he could have changed either wing-back prior to the game and brought Cessinho in, who I thought had a really good second half.
Yeah.
And the comment about the attacking unit, just for our friend who came in a bit late, was I was talking about the first half. In the first half, we never had a shot. We never had a shot on target, and we were absolutely dreadful. So, right, so let's get that out of the way. The lineup we've got 18 available. Well, actually, we've got 20 available players, but 9 of those have never started a championship game. So we've now got 20 out of our expanded squad of 40.
Yeah.
Unavailable, 18 injured, 2 out on loan. So what else can you do? You couldn't say what else can you do? Bring in Chris Martin and Andy Wideman up front. What else could he do? But fair play to him. He made the changes at half time and he got an extra, I'd say, 20% out of some players. I got to be honest. Definitely. I mean, Naki Wells, the name but one.
Yeah, no, definitely. Les, I mean, it's a testimony to, at last, the efforts of the academy, that the average age of the bench was, somebody says, 19.8, and that was with 2 24-year-olds, and I'm not quite sure how old Cessignon is, but there was, and Dave Fevs put up on Twitter on an OTIB a picture of the bench, and it was a maternity ward, but the academy at last, Les, is starting to produce prospects, isn't it? Yeah.
I think we need to be a bit realistic. He hasn't actually got any choice unless he goes in with three or four subs, which he's not going to do. He's going to have to pick some young guys. He's not going to just pick some random Joe off the street, is he? So he's going to have to look at the best young group of players in the youth setup and put them in the squad. Are they ready to play for us? I very much doubt it. I think a lot of them, from what I've heard, are probably looking at loans when we get our squad back and fit to conference level, League Two level. But in terms of the starting lineup, I like Ian said, he hasn't really got much choice. I mentioned after the Sheffield United game with Towler that just because you have one good game and you're that young, sometimes you need to be taken out of the firing line.
Mm.
So I was a little bit surprised that he started today, just because you want to get them in and out, just to
particularly when he had Sessegnon available, wasn't it? Yeah, but then I suppose you can bring on the more experienced player, even though he's not that experienced. Bring on a more experienced player if you need to.
No, you do. But like Ian said, Pearson saw the problem. He saw that Towler wasn't having a good half. He saw that he could be getting sent off at any minute, and he made the change before half time. You don't see that very often. That's what good managers do.
Yeah. And other than a couple of rash tackles, though, which got him the yellow cards, I thought he did okay. And maybe not great coming off with like 90 seconds to go before the break. But as you rightly say, the correct decision. Mark, I mean, let's look at the detail of the game. I mean, you know, the first 2 minutes of the match, probably longer, they were camped in our half. And after 15 minutes, I looked at the possession stats on the BBC website, and it was 82-18. I mean, Swansea have always had, even if you go back 10, 15 years when they had a really good team, they certainly know how to play a good standard of possession football, don't they? But they didn't really threaten to begin with, did they?
No, I mean, they've changed the coach several times, but kept the same structure, and they've stuck to their footballing roots, which is great. You know, it's good for the club and it's good for the fans. But no, they didn't really threaten, but they stuck. The problem is, Towler's inexperienced, and he wasn't really helped by Callas. And Ian will back me up on that. You know, we were really exposed down that right-hand side. And in that five, if you get behind the wing-backs, and it was very easy for them to do, Danda was behind the front two, and they were just able to work the ball between Towler and Callas very easily, time after time, free kick. Connor Roberts doing his triple sulco with Pike every time he got touched by one of our players, wouldn't help him as well. Winning free kicks, and it looked like it was just a matter of time until they scored.
Well, let's come on to Leicester a little bit more of the action in the first half. I mean, they seemed as though they stepped up a gear. 40 minutes, AU set up something for Jamal Lowe. Danda had a shot blocked. 25 minutes, Hurricane took Bent's full stretch. Half an hour gone, and it was 75-25 on the possession. And City, I think, as Loud Lisa said on here, first half mirrored the Norwich away game. Men against boys. 39 minutes. Hunt saving tackle, put the ball over for a corner. Then it didn't go over the line from that resulting kick. Mariappa cleared. And then Bentley did a worldie. And then Hourihan had a free kick blocked. I think that was blocked rather than saves. But that was a critical part of the game, wasn't it, Les, when City weathered that pressure and didn't buckle?
Well, I mean, if you're playing poorly and you're getting overrun, you need to have that little bit of luck. And once, when it's 0-0 at half time, you're going in thinking, well, are Swansea going to be able to maintain that same level of dominance and momentum? Because if you look at Swansea's record, they don't score a lot of goals.
No.
So from our perspective, it's just about staying in the game. And if you can get in at half time at 0-0, yes, we had a bit of luck and some great defending or great saves, then you're well in the game. And what impressed me the most was once we actually conceded and the response to that. But when a team could dominate, but you need to put the ball in the net. If you don't put the ball in the net, the other team are still
winning. It's not how long you've got a ball, it's what you do with it. And Leicester City, great exponents of that. And I don't know whether that extended back as far as when he took over. Ian, second half. We had a chance right at the start of it. Wells breakaway after when he got a corner. Nagy. Another good performance from Nagy. Backinson over the top. But, you know, the inevitable goal came, and it was our friend Mr. Stroud giving the penalty against Casey Palmer. Needless handball or just body position all wrong? How did you see the penalty? Definite, harsh? Your thoughts, Ian, on that?
I thought it was a little bit similar in terms of application to the O'Dowda penalty at Barnsley, where he gave the referee a decision to make. And yeah. He could have easily let the ball go. He didn't need to stop it. He didn't need to head it. He didn't need to do it. Just let it go.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he got his body in awkward position. His arm was out. Was it deliberate handball? I don't know. Does it actually have to be deliberate handball these days? Because I watch a lot of football, and I'm not 100% sure. So if somebody had done that against us and we had a penalty, we wouldn't be on here saying, well, no, that was, we shouldn't have had that penalty. So, yeah, you know, I mean, he's given Stroud a decision to make, and he's made the decision. There was a couple of decisions against us earlier on that could have gone against us. I mean, let's be honest, he could have sent Tauber off for a second yellow. And he didn't do that, and that's why
Pearson
hooked him out of there. And I disagree that Taylor had a decent game. I thought he had a terrible game, if you want the truth. He's a young kid. He's playing out of position. He is left-sided, and he's got a load to learn. But at least he's competing until we've got the likes of Rowe, De Silva, Nurse, Pring back in the team. And I certainly don't think we're going to see some of those this season. There's 9 weeks of the season left.
Yeah. No, it's, anyway, so you'd have thought, based on the last couple of games, or in fact the last 5 months, that going 1-0 down to a side that are very hard to beat on their own ground, that we would have wilted, but we didn't. And Mark, the equalising goal on 65 minutes, it was as good as any of the three goals that we scored, wasn't it? Take us through that first goal.
Well, Viner is bursting up on through on the right. Up on he's charging Gahey down on the right hand side. Who didn't manage to get the ball away. He turns the ball over, and plays it. I think he plays it into the path of Backinson, but it runs across Backinson to Wells, and he just buries it in the bottom right hand corner. But a great rob by Viner. And, you know, showing that sort of determination. I mean, that can change matches. I mean, you look at Michael Morris. Morrison the other week for Reading. That sort of determination in a split second, rather than a defender just clearing the ball down the pitch, our midfielder is closed, not only closed in down, he's won the ball and he's got an assist. That changed the game completely. And just very quickly, going back to Palmer, we sucked up the penalty, Nnokua Sowah, it was his reaction to that, and the whole team's reaction to going 1-0 down was just so completely unexpected. A few weeks ago, we might have wilted. Well, last week, we would have wilted. The response was just nothing short of phenomenal.
No, it was. And Viner popped up again 5 minutes after that, have a shot saved. Woodman diving well to his right to keep that one out. I mean, Les, not only did Pearson make the substitution to protect his player just before the break, but it was a fundamental change, pushing Viner into the middle, wasn't it? Yes, and your thoughts on that, and then we'll talk about to the second goal.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he changed it to what seemed like a 4-3-3, and he needed to do that because we were so desperately poor in the first half. And I thought the first 5-6 minutes of the second half, we competed better, we were further up the pitch. And the thing that grated me most about the penalty decision was we had a corner just before then, a few minutes before. Mm. And Backinson had this shot on the edge of the box, just inside the box. And he was completely taken out as he took the shot.
Yes, he was.
And if that's anywhere else on the pitch, that's a free kick, maybe a yellow card. No questions asked at all. But he didn't give it. And then we had an issue where Swansea player was down with a head injury when Bentley had the ball in his hand from a headed back pass. And then the drop ball was given back to Swansea. And then they went up the other end and scored from the penalty, which was obviously a debatable penalty. And I think there needs to be some consistency. When fouls take place, it doesn't matter where they happen. If it's a foul, it's a foul. And it grates me that he didn't have the bottle to give the penalty for Backinson, which was a foul.
Yeah.
But he had the goal to give what looked, you know, like Ian said, I don't know what the rules are about handball anymore. did he deliberately try and handball it? Of course he didn't try and deliberately handball it. He's on the edge
his
of his own
position,
box.
Under, his body yeah, position.
He had a poor body position. His arm was up. But he didn't deliberately handball it.
Now, do you think that's one, Les, where if we'd have had VAR at this level, then, you know, VAR would have given it or not?
VAR would have spent half an hour trying to work it out, and then it would have an inconclusive. Probably would have given a penalty simply because of his arm position, but yeah. it wouldn't have been clear cut. So for Stroud to make that decision, for me, is Stroud being the old Keith Stroud. I mean, yeah. I'm not even convinced he's hit his arm.
He's Stroud being a. There we go. Yeah. I love you. Yeah.
How far away from the ball was he? And why didn't he get his assistant to give him? Stroud made a decision. He didn't look at his assistant, did he? I don't think so.
No, I don't think there was any conversation between them.
Yeah.
He just made the call.
So he's not able to see that.
No,
even the commentator said, how would he have seen that from the angle that he was at? But maybe they shouted. And then the second goal, Les Wells, who's been on fire since he's been played in his proper position, had a shot deflected for a corner. That was a bit Sunday Lee, wasn't it? Or do you think he meant it when he curled it in? They'd have been disappointed to concede one like that, Les.
Well, I mean, when you look at the actual corner that we scored from, It was actually very clever on our part because we've changed the way we attack corners, or it looked like we changed the way we've attacked corners, and the fact that we load a load of players in the 6-yard box and whip it on top of the goalkeeper. And that's a change from what we've done previously. So they've obviously worked on it. I mean, granted, the free kick, the corner's gone straight in. It's a great delivery. But when you've got so many people putting the keeper under pressure, it's very, very difficult. So I think we deserve a lot of credit for that. It ain't just a bit of luck that ball has been whipped into the top corner.
Yeah, it's...
You know, they've deliberately.
Well, I thought somebody had pinned the keeper. I thought somebody had pinned the keeper, but when I looked at the replay, no one had. He got himself in a position where the ball went over his head. And I've seen it happen before with goalkeepers. We all have when the ball's gone in, but it was a whipped corner with some pace. And a few minutes earlier, Palmer took a great free kick that he whipped in between the keeper and the defence, and Zach Viner
That's
finished
right.
up trying to
yeah.
hit him from two inches off the floor. And you can have your entire team could be 7 foot tall, but if you haven't got anybody to put the ball in the right area, you're wasting your time. And that's what I thought Palmer did today. He put the ball in the right areas. A few times he floated it. Jack Hunt took some free kicks that I was just screaming, get him off free kicks. Terrible.
Yeah, he's not very good. He's not very good.
But you need to. But he took a good one at Brentford, and Viner scored from it. So, But what we need to do, if you've got somebody,
but it's coaching, isn't it? Coaching.
Yeah, it is. But if you can coach all the set pieces you want, someone still needs to put the ball where it needs to go. And Palmer did that, and he's got nobody at this football club has ever said Casey Palmer can't play football. What people have said is he's very inconsistent, which he is.
Yeah.
Sometimes he causes you a problem in defence, and he did that today.
He did. He lost possession when we were on the offensive. That's one of his big downsides. That is.
Well, don't forget the penalty. And he can not have the work rate, but he's addressed that. And that's what I'm saying. If Naki Wells and Casey Palmer are at the top of their game, you're going to affect it. They're going to affect the game in the final third.
Of course they are.
Right? Yeah, so if you've got people behind them like Viner in Backinson who can, if you want to call it, shut the door, then that's okay, because then Palmer can go steaming forward. And I love seeing midfield players run past the ball. And that's something that we haven't done for seasons.
Yeah, so, no, you're right. Yeah, absolutely right, Ian. 100% right. P. Meekins has made a contribution here. They said, no, I'm using gender neutral there. They said Stroud was born a and will always be a. Press the right button. There we go. All right. So I'm just going a bit mad with these things here. Mark, Naki Wells, I say he was on fire. 94 minutes, he fired one just wide when you've expected him to score.
Semenyo, Semenyo played him in. It looked like it was too far away from Wells, but he actually used the pace of the ball and it
he
went
did.
Across
he
his body.
He got a touch.
And
he was very unlucky.
Yeah, he got a touch. He was unlucky. He put it. I think if he'd just perhaps hit it with the side of his foot, you know, with his instep, and it just poked wide.
In. But the third goal, which was the icing on the cake, Mark. I mean, you know, well done, Semenyo. 96th minute on my clock. Sloppy play by Woodman. And, but when was the last time we saw a City player take advantage in that sort of manner? I can't think.
Well, Fulton played the ball back to him. And the keeper just took a touch and let it go to his right. And Semenyo, like all good forwards, charged it down, turned his back on the ball. 9 times out of 10, the keeper clears it. But it just went up in the air. And he's chased. And the good thing is, Antoine's turned, chasing the ball, and walks it into the net for his first league goal. And that is the icing on the cake. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. But City were aggressive, even in injury time. And there were 7 minutes. I think we were all pretty shocked by 7 minutes.
Where the hell did they get that?
I thought five.
Peter said
five. I don't know.
Well, it was 10 minutes.
They had 7 minutes, didn't they?
By the time they'd done the whole thing. I mean, I'd written down as well, so there might be a slight adjustment to this. They had 19 shots, 9 on target. We had 5 shots, well, probably 6, 3 on target, because we scored the goals. I mean, it is a remarkable turnaround. Ian, what can we put this down to? Because the coach, you know, he's probably had, what, 2 training sessions with them and a session in a hotel pre-match and then a half-time words of wisdom. But this is a Bristol City side now that if this was 20 games to go, not 13, you really would be thinking we could put a run together. But what has changed?
Well, I think a lot of things have changed tactically even during the game. But if you look at, I'll give you an example, 2 players, and this happened at Middlesbrough as well. Zizou and Wells played closer together. And that means that when Zizou flicks the ball on, it might go to Naki Wells rather than just go to their defence.
Yeah.
In the second half and in the first half at Borough, we passed the ball forward when we got it, and we passed it forward mostly on the floor. And in the second half today, we closed their defenders down, because it's what I'm saying about the commentator blathering on about how comfortable their centre backs were on the ball. Well, yeah, if no one's going to tackle you and everybody lets you play, I mean, Grimes must have thought he was on holiday in the first half. I mean, he had so much of the ball and 10 yards of space around him. He must have thought, well, send on a deck chair, boss, will you? Because I can do this all day. So you've got to look at it and say, in the first half, we got the tactics wrong. We didn't try and play in their half, which is another favourite of mine. But if we're playing in their half, they're very unlikely to score, right? So play in the half, retain the ball, pass it forward, show good movement, and don't just let them get away down the sides. Even if that means Wells dropping in on the left-hand side as he did in the second half, to stop them playing that simple ball forward to get the wide player in.
Yeah.
If you look at the 2 games, we've had more threat in the last 2 games than we had in the 10 games before it put together, because we just didn't have a threat.
100% right.
The set piece coming in on top, the goalkeeper, that's exactly what Barnsley were doing to us.
Yeah,
exactly
just
what
say
they
that.
Were doing
yeah.
to us.
Yeah.
Let's, right on top of the keeper with players charging in.
Les, do you think this turnaround is a lack of respect shown to the previous manager and his coaching staff, where they just given up? I mean, is it as basic as that, or what? Because you know, we wouldn't have, even if we were doing flying high, we wouldn't have expected to go to Swansea the way they've been playing with their home form and get a penny, would we?
Well, I mean, I think the players completely lost their confidence. And you look at the way we responded when we went 1-0 down, there was a real fight, a real hunger, a real work rate. It felt as if the players themselves felt they'd been harshly treated, whether rightly or wrongly, but they responded positively. If you go back to how it was previously, you know, we all know what would have happened. We could see a penalty, their heads would have gone. They would have dropped, we would have sat back, we would have got overrun. And it didn't happen. And I think that shows that the mindset has completely changed. And I think that does come from confidence. And I don't think people should underestimate the fact that when you're playing and you see Nigel Pearson on the sideline, a proven manager who has got promotions on this level, that instantly gives an extra bit of impetus. And that's no disrespect to Dean Holden. And I think that's what it boils down to. I think there is tactical changes, which were made at half time, but there's also that confidence that has come back after that victory against Middlesbrough.
Mark, what did you think of Pham today? I mean, he scored two and made one in the week. I saw a couple of comments that he was strolling around, particularly in the first half, and I texted Dave Fevs and said, need to take him off and bolster up the midfield, where he didn't do that. He just pushed Viner up. But how did you think Pham played today? And what do you think Nigel Pearson would have learnt now? I mean, he's got two wins. Whether that win against Middlesbrough would appear under his stats, I don't know. But Pham's performance, and what do you think Nigel Pearson has learned?
I think he, you know, he's a hard working player, and if he gets decent service, he can score goals. But I mean, the first half was a non-entity, because when we did get the ball in midfield, we made some terrible passes and we just gave up possession, and it was straight back at us. And the second half, you know, helped bring him into the game, because we, you know, playing a midfield four, and he was able to get some service, you know, from the flanks. And you know, Palmer was able to come into the game, and there weren't the distance between the defence and attack wasn't as bad as it was in the first half. But I think if you just look at the side, I think the players are more of a reflection of their manager, really, over two games. And I think that's what it comes down to with Dean Holden, just not having the belief maybe in themselves, and the manager's got to bring that out the players sometimes.
Yeah,
it's a bit, you can criticise Dean Holden, but he obviously didn't have the ability to lift the players to put.
But he had two other coaches there. It wasn't just him. They were meant to be there to hope. They were meant to. Well, it wasn't. they were meant to be there to help.
They were there to hope. A lot of it comes to the players. I mean, Johnson used to say, you know, when the players get over the line, both Johnson said that it's up to them. But I think, you know, Nigel Pearson's on the side of the pitch, living every kick, isn't he, and every tackle today. And yeah, there was just so much more determination in the players in the second half. I think that the tweak of formation helped, but the players have still got to lift themselves. I mean, some of the decision making in the second half was brilliant, to charge down that goal at the end, the way Viner turned that ball over, because he's quick over those 5 yards and to Rob Gahey, whereas he would have just stood there perhaps the other week. I mean, the fact that he was playing as an aggressive, more of an attacking role in the second half, able to come out, not just sitting in front of a back four, but able to take that chance to press when he had the opportunity, because that would never have happened under Holden. We would have just been like statues, and the game had every... it looked like it would follow the Norwich game, where we just wilted once they scored the first goal. The players lifted themselves and we've come back.
Les, I mean, Marks and Andy, and I think, have referred to Callas. I mean, he looked a broken man after the defeat home last week. I mean, as I say, it's all about confidence. But, you know, in the way they played, you know, those coaches, they've been there all the way along this. They would have sat down and said to Pearson, look, Dean wanted us to do it this way, but we were saying so and so. Do you think that sort of conversation took place? What do you think is down to the turnaround? Because he said, it was interesting, one little snippet I picked up on, he said, look, these players, they've got the chance to impress, and some people are trying really hard. And he said, and I've worked with some of these players, some have got the chance to impress me, and some may not do so well, you know, and he stuck with his team. So I think he's still learning. But, you know, what, other than him learning, how culpable do you think those two coaches were in the rubbish that's been served up since, I'll say, the middle of November?
Well, they are culpable because they are a management team. They are the three figureheads whose responsibility it is to get the best out of the players. It's really hard to put a finger on it, because Holden was clearly very much liked by the players. Mm. But... you know, it's just difficult to say, because we just don't know. But
there's your problem.
No, that is the problem. There's absolutely problem. Right. We said it at the start of the season. We said you don't want to employ a manager because the players like him. You want to employ a manager because the players respect him. You know.
Yeah.
And
you could say the same thing. You could say, was Dean Holden culpable for Lee Johnson? I mean, McAllister was fired, as well as Lee Johnson, but Holden stayed there. So
McAllister went a few days later, actually, because that anyway.
You're right. Dave, you're splitting hairs there. Semantics. I mean, semantics. what I'm saying is, when I look at the thinking around it, you look at the fact that they've gone out and got Nigel Pearson. Brilliant. Okay, well done. How can the person that made that decision make the decision to employ Dean Holden? Because the thinking
who made the decision? And as we've said on here, I've put a couple of tweets out. If you saw my Mark Ashton speaks using SpeakPick, it's the same as my talking pet if you've tried it. But he has been conspicuous this week by silence, hadn't he, Ian, Mr. Ashton? Because you'd think he'd be saying, look at this. I mean, was it really a case of the owner saying, enough is enough, let's cut all this shit out and let's go out and do something?
We know that he was involved in the interview process for Pearson because Pearson said so, right? So Pearson said, I met with Mark Ashton, John Lansdowne, or spoke to Mark Ashton, Steve Lansdowne, John Lansdowne. I met with them, and the two quotes on the official announcement came from John Lansdowne, chairman, and Stephen Lansdowne, Mark Ashton, chief exec. So he hasn't been quite, and in fairness to Mark Ashton, you won't hear me say that very often, but in fairness to Mark Ashton, he isn't normally that vocal. It's not like he's on Radio Bristol every other week. He's not a Darren McAntony type character where he's on Radio Bristol every week or being interviewed by the Evening Post. I don't think the bloke's done...
Well, he's not been very visible in the last couple of years because we've been shit.
Well, he's not...
Yeah, and he only comes out when there's a good news story.
Dave, he's not... But he's not normally visible. And he wasn't that visible when, I think, did we win four on the trot at the start of the season? And he wasn't all over the media then. He's not on social media at all. So I think, you know, we have to be fair to the guy until such time as the information comes out. If this story around Ipswich is true, and part one has come true because... You know, an American consortium have bought the club. The owner's forgiven £100 million in debt, and they've given him £17.5 million for the club. So, if part two is Mark Ashton going there, then all well and good. But until that happens, we don't know if any of this is true. And I think we just need to be a bit fair and reasonable.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, Red Robin's put on here. He said, Lansdowne makes all the decisions. Let's not go down the Ashton-appointed Dino route. Yeah, I mean, Les, I mean, what should we read anything? Is Mark Ashton on the naughty step, as some people have said this week? Is he, as the chairman, the owner? I mean, the owner's bypassed his son as well because, you know, they could have had a three-way Zoom, just like they were sat on the edge of the pitch. They could have had, doesn't matter where they are, they could have had Junior Lansdowne in wherever he is and Steve in Guernsey and Pearson in the club studio. They could have said, look, we'd like to welcome Nigel here. We hope he has, we've got him to the end of the season. We hope he stays beyond that. But they haven't done any of this stuff, really, have they? You know, there's nobody been fronting it. So what, if anything, should we read into it? Or are we just trying to make smoke when there's nothing there?
Well, I think the reason why Lansdowne's taken control of this and has done the radio interviews is because he's thoroughly pissed off with what's happened over the last few months. And I think he just sees it as his responsibility to front up as the owner of the football club. We haven't seen much of Ashton and John Lansdowne in terms of the, like, a press conference in relation, like we had with Dean Holden. That might be because of the timing. We're in the middle of a season where we've got lots of games coming up very quickly and they want to focus on getting the formalities out of the way, get the interviews done rather than making a big show of it and just focus on the football. So, you know, again, it's difficult to say whether Ashton's on the naughty step, but everyone's right when they say, you know, he hasn't been visible throughout this process at all, which suggests to me either that maybe, you know, he's been instructed by Lansdowne to keep your nose or keep away from the spotlight.
Keep out of it. Bit. I mean, yeah. Mark, look, Mark, if Ashton does go to Ipswich, you know, it's not going to look very good because, you know, in the summer, you know, this appointment of Holden, now I don't know whether Pearson was well enough to be interviewed in the summer, if at all, yeah, but this appointment of Holden and then, oh, look, Ipswich suddenly go in and bring Paul Cook in, you know, these things, when people move jobs, sometimes there's a long gestation period before it has happened. And if Ashton, you know, maybe people talk about torpedoing interview process. Oh, you don't want Paul Cook, Dean. Oh, you don't want Paul Cook, Steve. Let's go with Dino. He's got the players. If Ashton goes and Cook gets the Ipswich manager's job, it's going to stink, isn't it, Mark? Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, the reason that Holden got the job is something must have gone seriously wrong, even if Pearson wasn't well, which he wasn't, because he developed really bad COVID symptoms around that time. Then why recruit Holden? He wouldn't qualify for the job. So something must have gone wrong in the interview process with Houghton, probably. I mean, the media were convinced that Houghton had got the job. It was announced on Sky Sports News, other media outlets. Maybe even Paul Cook. We don't know if there was anybody else involved, but I mean that the whole thing did stink. So 6 weeks to you know, taking 6 weeks to pick, you know, your assistant. But even if Ashton does go, we don't know who come along. But Steve's obviously got peed off after the Barnsley debacle. You know, no corners, one shot in the old game. It was we were only going to go backwards, so he had to grab it and say. You know, he had to do something, no question.
Yeah. I mean, the galling thing in all of this is, you know, if we'd have got, if, as you would say, and if my mum had whatever, she'd be my dad or something like that, right? But a galling thing in all of this, if we'd have made the right appointment in the summer, because everybody said this was a weak division, Norwich City are proving otherwise on that, but if we'd have made the right appointment in the summer, we may well have had the injury crisis that we've had, right? And when you consider the injuries that we have had, how well we've done, yeah, despite that eight-match run, that eight-match losing run, or the general form over the last 4 months. If you're Steve Lansdowne, Ian or Les, both of you come in individually or separately, you're thinking, oh, shit, I got that wrong back in the summer. Somebody got it wrong. And maybe Steve trying to save money, because Pearson's not going to come cheap. I mean, you first, Les. I mean, you know, this was a season where, you know, another 8 or 9 points, yeah, which is only a point a game average on the losing run, we'd have still been in with a shout, wouldn't we? Yeah?
Oh, yeah, we would be. I think I'm going to have a little guess and think about what happened in the summer. I think they did go for Houghton. I think something must have gone wrong during the contract negotiations that meant that they couldn't sign him on for whatever reason. And then I think their mindset probably changed from, we've gone through 6 weeks trying to get Houghton, we haven't got him, COVID, we don't know what's going to happen to the business side of things. Let's now change our mindset from a big name manager like Houghton to a much, much safer internal appointment. Give him a 1 year contract, see how he goes. Our squad's very, very good at this level. He shouldn't, you know, be in a position where we could go down. Let's just consolidate for this year. So I think their mindset may have changed throughout the process once they realised talks with Houghton perhaps weren't going as smoothly as they'd hoped. And then, but yeah, it's all ifs and buts, though, isn't it? It's all ifs and buts.
Yeah, no, we can speculate all the time. But look, let's get back down to some facts. I mean, Ian, injuries, Williams' operation on a hamstring. What the hell is going on there? Now, was it his hamstring that caused him to be out for most of the season, or is that the rehab, the latest injuries picked up? But it's bloody shambles.
There's three players that have had a problem. So let's take Joe Williams. First day of training, he kicks the ball. I mean, not kicked a ball for a while, according to him. Does his thigh.
Thigh, okay, that's right. Dave's so, just put that as a text.
His
yeah.
thigh. So he's done his thigh. Then whilst in rehab, he does his hamstring. So he then goes, after a while of doing rehab, he then goes to another specialist. He says, right, you've got a problem with your hamstring. And then what happened, he still had some more rehab. Then he gets fit, we think. He plays a couple of games. He plays half a game for the under-23s. He comes in. We play him at Sheffield United. He comes off. He's got his hamstring sore. So he now goes to a specialist. I don't know if it's the same one or another one. And then he puts a post, I think it was on Instagram, where he said, at last, I think we've got to the bottom of what's wrong. Today he had an operation described as a preventative operation to stop him doing the same injury again. That's one injury. Patterson is now injured with the same injury that initially he didn't need an operation for. He just needed rehab. Then he went to another specialist who said he did need an operation. He then had the operation. He then went through rehab. He then came back. Today, he's got the same problem.
Is this so Pato, is it? One. Yeah. Is this Pato?
Pato. Now, yes. Now, Nathan Baker did his hamstring August the 28th. He was said to be back at Christmas or just after Christmas. It's now February the 27th because during rehab...
It's six months.
Yeah, it was seven. But during rehab, he got another injury. I think it's his thigh. So that he was then said that would set him back 4 to 6 weeks. Now, that was about 4 or 5 weeks ago. So those are the three players that have had treatment, had rehab, and got injured. Now, when I look down at the players that are injured, as far as I'm aware, we've got seven out for the season, and that's Vyman, Pring, Edwards, Oppie, Williams now, Mawson, Martin, and Adelakun. Now, that is a minimum. Now, long-term injuries, we've got Baker, Nurse, Walsh, De Silva, O'Dowda, who I saw training the other day, Awara Edwards, Tommy Rowe, Marley Watkins. Now, in fairness, Watkins and Nurse both did hamstrings, but not at Bristol City. They did them on loan. Then you've got the forgotten man, Saiku Jenner, Henry Lansbury, why in God's name did we sign him? And Pato. So that's 18 players injured. On top of that, out of our expanded squad with the new young lads that have come in, Alex Scott and Tommy Conway, we've now got 40 players. There is two on loan, Willacott and Morton.
Yeah.
So that leaves us out of the 40 with 20 available players. Now, of those, of the 40, nine have never started a championship game, and that is Bell, Jenner, Pearson, Edwards. Now, Jenner and Edwards are injured. Morton, Conway, Scott, the other Edwards, Awara, who's injured, and we'll have caught this out on loan. So that's a full resume of our injuries, which is what I said to people today when they're saying to me, could he make changes? Well, yeah, he can change the formation, but that's about – he's still got – more or less the same number of players, particularly with all those young lads. I think it's unfair. When the pressure's off, you can give Conway a game up front and let Pearson play and give him 20 minutes. When we got 56 points or something like that, I say, right, lads, now's the time to give him a try.
Yeah, and he might have given, and if we'd have been 3-0 down today, he might have let the youngsters have a run out.
Did you mention James Morton?
Yeah, he's at Gillingham, isn't he, on loan?
Oh, he's on loan,
he's on loan again. Is Cundy. I don't think that's Jason Cundy. That's Robbie Cundy, isn't it? I mean, Les, I'll come to you on this next one, Les. I mean, I hope that Pearson stays on beyond the end of the season because there is so much to do behind the scenes. Are the coaches going to stay on? What about the medical team? What about the contract players? We've got to hope that he's almost interviewing us to some extent. Would you agree with that, Les? That Pearson...
To an extent. What I found really interesting in the build-up to this game was how keen and how clear Pearson was in saying that he wanted this job longer term. He made that explicitly clear. And I don't see that changing unless there is real problems behind the scenes, which I don't think there is. And when it comes to the summer, the club's going to have to really sit down and think about how we move forward, because the medical team has been in utter shambles this year. Oh, we are in a position. We don't want to call people to lose their jobs, especially in the current climate. But are we at a point where we need to make some changes there? And with so many players out of contract, I think, with all due respect to them, we need to let them go and say to Nigel Pearson,
right, what do you want?
This is the budget. This is the transfer fees we're willing to spend. This is how much we got in terms of wages. We'll do that negotiation. You tell us what you want. Because so many players are going, and we need to freshen that up. And we need to say to Pearson, here's a good contract for you.
But isn't that what we've been saying for quite a few months now, that this is chance to have you use the term there, clear the decks. It's a clean slate. And when you talk about paying transfer fees, I would be very surprised if we paid any fee more than what we paid for FAM. Totally surprised. I think we'll be going out there looking for players and paying high wages, right? And okay, we're competing with clubs with parachute payments. I mean, Mark, would you agree with that view that, you know, it Pearson or whoever, but I think it's got to be somebody of Pearson's stature, the world is there, you know, they are going to be able to shape things in a massive way, aren't they? If they're kept on, if he's kept on.
I mean, the COVID world should completely change the transfer market. But we've thrown big fees at the likes of Callas, and Casey Palmer was probably, we paid $4.5 million for him. And
this is all pre-COVID.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think we've got to be better. And I think, it does present a good opportunity. I think there's got to be, you know, some of those players will be let go. Hopefully we can retain. I'd like to see us retain Andy Vyman. But of course, we don't know what sort of condition he's going to come back. We'd be making offers substantially less than they're currently on. I would imagine.
I mean, Les, what would you say? I mean, look, next season, if we started with a strike force, let's say FAM signs a contract, because FAM signing a contract, he's a known quantity. If we started the season with FAM, Naki Wells being played in the right position, Chris Martin and Andy Vyman, that's not a bad, if you're going to play four, no more than two, nobody plays more than two, you might even play one. That's pretty good strength up front, isn't it?
It's pretty good strength, but we, assuming Pearson stays on, we need players who are going to suit the way that he wants to shape the club. If you look at his track record with Martin and Byman, I'm not 100% on this, but did he not get rid of both of them when he was at Derby?
Yeah, right. Didn't he let Chris Martin go to Fulham?
Yeah, and also, one thing with Pearson is that he mentions a lot his pace, especially in attacking positions. And with all due respect to Chris Martin, Byman to a lesser extent, Byman works hard. I'm not sure he's blessed with great pace. They are not necessarily players who fit into that mindset. I think Byman has a one-year clause in his contract, doesn't he? So maybe you'd expect the club to extend that, because I think he is very, very highly rated by those behind the scenes. But yeah, it's an interesting summer, because it all depends on whether Pearson stays, doesn't it? I mean, I'd be amazed if the club didn't take this opportunity, assuming Pearson wants to be here.
I mean, Ian, I mean, if you're Nigel Pearson, right, and, you know, he's got his house down here, I don't know where his permanent residence is in Sheffield. The country. Sheffield, all right, miles away, right? But Bristol City is a project that you can actually do something. And if you're Pearson, and let's say Steve Lansdowne says, Nigel, look, we're paying you, I don't know, 20 grand a week, a million a year, that is, 20 grand a week. And if you get us promoted, we're going to give you a £2 million bonus, yeah? Or you go to Newcastle and they say, we'll pay you £2 million a year on a 3-year contract where you could be out of work in 18 months or less. What do you think the mindset is? Because the indications are, the way he's talking, he just seems to be, he's thoughtful and everything like that. Do you think he'd go for the money or the opportunity? Because you can actually achieve something here with City, can't you? You know, when you look at the clubs that have been promoted, this is a man that could actually do it, isn't he?
Finished?
Yep. Okay. Ark. Ark. E.
I got you there, didn't I? Look, the honest thing is, first of all, the Newcastle job has to be available. Secondly, they'd have to want him. And everything up there is geared to Rafa Benitez, who's now out of work, coming back in. If he'd take the job, and he probably would because his kids are over here and he didn't want to be in China. So, yeah, that, but it's all ifs, buts and ands. I think if you're looking to have a project and work for someone who's seen as a progressive owner and a good owner, so Mark Ashton tells us, across football and is a doyen of talk sport, then, yeah, I think you could... I think he'd take the job. I think he'd like the job, but you need to see how he does. Great, we've got off to a fantastic start, and I'm as chuffed as hell. But it's two games. Let's see where we are in 12 games. What we got left now, Dave? 13 games? 13 games left. Right, okay. Let's see where we are then and what we're going to do. And in terms of the players out of contract, I'd like to keep Zizou. I'd like to keep Liam Walsh.
Yeah,
I'm not overly bothered about any of the other senior players because we've got, you know, I don't mind. I think Tommy Rowe is a really handy player to have around. But we've got, I think, six younger left-backs at the club. The trouble is, four out of the six are injured and the others really are kids that need to go out on loan. And that I'm not including Riley Taylor in that.
No, because he's not a left back. I mean, let's sort of move on, look forward a little bit. Just before I do, Mark, I mean, one of the things that I noticed on there, because I just kept the feed running on the Robin's TV, the huddle at the end. I thought that something that I've never seen our players do ever. Yeah, and I don't know whether he did this at Leicester or is any of his clubs, but there seems to have been, he's bought a togetherness, and if there were any factions for now, well, nobody's going to poke their head above the parapet, but that was good to see that, wasn't it? That little huddle at the end.
Yeah, I think that shows that the squad, you know, the team are together as one, and Nigel Pearson said in his interviews, he sees himself as a manager, although what are titles, who works as part of a team. So they all, you know, you win and lose together. But I think today it showed under the new regime that, you know, you can see that an awful penalty and the players didn't lose it.
No.
They didn't get frustrated. They didn't take it out on themselves. All they did was reacted positively and just kept going forward. And that's the thing to pick up from today.
Yeah.
But Nigel Pearson, I mean, his ability to attract players would be great. I remember at Leicester, he took a chance on Jamie Vardy, who was at Fleetwood Town, and he paid $1 million for him. Found Riyad Mahrez, I think, in the French second division. And if he can get our scouting network to work effectively, we could be in for some very exciting times. But it is only small steps because we look a very good counter-attacking team in those two games. We've done very well, good counter-attacking team. We've only won 7 games at home all season. We won 8 games in the previous 2 seasons. Let's see how we can take our game to other teams.
It is 7 at home and 6 away.
That's the test, isn't it?
Next up is Bournemouth. I watched a bit of their game today. Jack Wiltshire got sent off, I think, for a second book. I believe he was only on the pitch 15 minutes. I was chatting to a Bournemouth fan and they were underwhelmed at the appointment of Jonathan Woodgate. I see he's got Gary O'Neill there and Joe in the background. Les, I mean, Bournemouth next up. I mean, my Bournemouth friend said there's a few players there think that they're better than the Championship. They did win against Watford today. Big test on Tuesday night, isn't it, Les?
Yeah, it's a big test. And I think Bournemouth, who had struggled their previous two games, got a great result today against Watford, who are obviously bang in form. And I think it's going to be a really, really tough game. I think they're going to be full of confidence. And like you said, they've got some real quality in there. Some players who are established in the Premier League, let alone the Championship. And I don't think they have that same level of discontent in the squad that maybe Watford do. So it'll be really interesting to see how we cope with their attacking threats. That's where they've
got a few. Goalkeeper was at four. I don't know if you saw the goal, but I thought the goalkeeper, he was beaten at the near post for the goal.
Yeah, he was. But you also got to take into account that they missed some really good chances before then. I can't remember the left winger They signed for God knows how many million, who got their goals, very, very talented. And
Dan Tumor. You know,
it's Dan Tumor, that's it. And it's,
he scored against us, didn't he?
Yeah. And for me, you know, you take, for me personally, I take a point all day long.
You would. You know, and they got that Ben Pearson, Ben Pearson in the middle as well. He was man of the match today. Yeah.
You win against Borough. You win against Swansea. A good point to consolidate the form and the confidence. You take that all day long for me.
Yeah. Ian, your thoughts on Bournemouth? I mean, they won't be having Jack Wiltshire, although he was only a sub. Anyway, Les just said a point would be a good result. We'd have taken a point today, to be fair. But, you know, what would you look? And is it Tuesday or Wednesday next week? I can't remember.
I think it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. Yeah.
It is Wednesday.
Yeah, you're live on Sky, though.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, it'd be on the red button, Mark. I think you looking at the game, like I've said ad nauseum that, you know, there's not a lot you can do with the team apart from change the formation. And according to him, the formation in the second half was a 4-5-1. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him set up the same way from the off against Bournemouth. Would I take a point or play the game? After the last two, I'd probably play the game, whereas previously I'd have taken the point.
Yeah.
Going to be a really tough game. We're at home. A lot of it depends how Bournemouth play. If they come to, if you like, if they come for a point and they sit back a little bit, then that could actually cause us a few problems because we're not great at breaking teams down and playing through them. Although, you know, players like Palmer and backing some of this forward passing might make us a little bit better at that. But no doubt. I mean, I'm glad it's Wednesday, not Tuesday, because it gives the players a little bit of time to rest. It
recovery
gives them
day.
More time on the training ground to work on.
Yeah.
Yeah, work on set pieces.
Specials.
Talk about Bournemouth's strengths and weaknesses. And it's the sort of thing you hope Bournemouth go in with their big heads on, and we go in and we beat them. And if we beat them, then all of a sudden the confidence starts to build.
Starts coming back.
And players start. Yeah, and then who knows what happened. But I'm only looking at the moment. I'm looking at the bottom 50, of the table.
56
I'm
saying, points. 56 points. Yeah.
16 points clear of Rotherham, who were three from bottom. None of those sides down there are in great form.
Nope.
So let's be thankful for that, because a few weeks ago, if I'd have said, right, see how it goes, or I'll guarantee you can finish, you'll be in the championship next season, I know which one we'd have all have taken.
Yeah. No, you're right. Coming to you finally, Mark. Yeah. So finally, Mark. I think Sessegnon might start on Wednesday. I think that might be the only change, because you probably won't play Towler there again. But what would you play the game or take a point hypothetically?
Oh, play the game, because you know we see the development of City. I mean, logic says that the sooner we can secure safety, then the club and Pearson get together and thrash out a long term deal.
Absolutely,
and then he can start planning for next season.
But it's only 9 weeks. It's only 9 weeks to go. So these decisions, you know, they're going to be concertinaed quite quickly. Yeah, and
there's nothing stopping us from playing a similar version that we did in the second half, 4-5-1, you know, a bit lopsided with Naki coming from out wide, not sitting back and letting Bournemouth come on to us, but being aggressive in the middle and winning the ball back and then counter attacking. There's nothing to say that we can't do that, and because of I think Norwich look like they're running away with the league, but second place is up for grabs, so I expect Bournemouth to come and try and win the game.
They'll
no question
looking.
About that, but that gives it a chance.
Yeah, I mean, and who's next, Mark, after Bournemouth? Is it QPR at home on Saturday? Is that right? Is it QPR next? Or anybody know? I should know this.
We've definitely got QPR coming up.
I think it is. Let's assume. Go on here.
Well, we've got Bournemouth on Wednesday, and we've got QPR at home on Saturday.
And then away after that.
So two home games.
Birmingham away after that, and then Blackburn.
Okay, all right. I mean, look, do we dare to dream, or are we being stupid?
I think when you look at the injury crisis, all it takes is for one or two more injuries to happen, and then we're really screwed down to the kids.
But
yeah.
All it takes now though is, you know, two or three more wins in a row, because clubs, we've done it in the Championship, thrown together, you know, we could win six in a row. You know, four in a row is considered good form in the Championship. I can remember Cottrell saying that. He never did it. But, you know, let's assume that win the next two, yeah? Do we, you know, and the players are coming back. Never mind injuries, but some of the players, Liam Walsh played an hour the other day. We keep saying about him, but some of the others coming back. Are we stupid to dare to dream, or... You know, because we're going game to game, aren't we? Got to win. But, you know, we've got to win, was it 9 out of 13 now, isn't it? That's it.
I think we should be happy to see the development of Bristol City, get safe as quickly as we can, see some pattern to our play, try and play, you know, the same team in consecutive games, keep the players injury free, because we haven't seen injuries to Wells or Pham. If Pham gets injured, that hurts us. Wells's pace... If he gets injured, that really hurts us as well. So, you know, we'd have to keep both of those players injury free for the remainder of the season to shoot up the league. But I'm hoping for a top half finish, maybe 10th would be good in the circumstances.
I put on O2, if we can better the points total of 2018-19, that'll be a bloody good end to the season. Gentlemen and listeners, and Max, Jack, you talked on OTIB about the sound quality being poor. I don't think anybody else has commented on that. But gentlemen and listeners, thanks a lot for hearing us out. Well, the listeners and guys, your contributions are always great, you know, and good times are around the corner, one would like to think. But it is a new dawn. We said that when Dean came on, but I don't think any of us believed it really. Although four wins out of four to begin with, we thought, oh, this looks good, but it wasn't. I'm looking forward to the next game.
I'll tell you what has happened, David.
The buzz is back.
I'll tell you what has happened, David. It proved what Ian said. How quickly you can appoint a new manager. Ian was saying this. It doesn't take that long to appoint a new manager. He just said, get a few Zoom calls going, didn't you, Ian? In the last edition, and there you go.
We did say JFDI.
Well, if you're on a, you know, if you're on a roof and the roof's on fire, it, you know, you don't have to call a board meeting to decide whether you get rail off the roof. You just throw a plank. Don't even worry about fear of heights. Just run across the plank, because it's infinitely better, you know, falling and hurting your leg rather than burning to death. So that's about where you are. And I totally agree, especially when people were saying, well, you know, talk about managers that are in work, and that adds weeks to when you've got such good managers that haven't got a job, you know, the likes of Eddie Howe, Nigel Pearson, Paul Cook, people like that. So, you know, hopefully that's learned us a lesson, but let's hope Nigel doesn't have to go through the process.
I'm going to give the last word to Tomo on this, because he's put a text up just now. He said, Pearson wants this, and I haven't heard the interview, but I'm guessing that's come across in the interview. Pearson wants this. I think without any hesitation at all, we want him. Lads, have a good rest of weekend, and anybody else who's listened, and we look forward to doing another one on Wednesday night. All the best, chaps. All the best to you.
Thank you. Stay safe, everybody. Bye. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye now.